This is the Hollywood Casino Press Box. Now back to Frank Cusimano on 590 The Fan and 590thefan.com.
We are broadcasting live from Maggie O'Brien's downtown. I tell you what, you wouldn't think pizza at an Irish restaurant. It's spectacular. Really good. Toasted ravs. And then how about the Reuben roll, Martin? Have you ever had a better appetizer?
It's unbelievable. And I had I may have had one or two yesterday, just a sample, but I didn't get my fill. And did Tom Stasiak, a friend of the show, was he properly fed yesterday?
Oh, my God.
Does the amount of food he gets affect the quality of video? Like, if you don't feed him, does he forget to white balance? I'm just wondering if that.
It's a definite motivator. And then our editor, Bill Bennett, if these guys, this is going to be one of the best edited and produced food picks ever.
A couple extra dissolves and wipes and finishing touches.
And, in fact, last night at like 10:20, he says, hey, what do you think about this Irish music? Because we have different music for the type of cuisine, and he's got some great music lined up for it. So we're excited about it.
We got a Game 3 tonight. You know, Game 3s don't have any kind of sizzle like a Game 6 or 7. But don't you get the sense in this series, coming off what happened Monday in San Jose, if you're the Blues and you come out flying again and you beat them again, it's only a Game 3. But you can maybe get a little bit of a hold of this series after they dominated Game 1. Can anybody do it back-to-back? And that's what's been so hard in these playoffs, is to see a team be the same team two games in a row. Very rare. The Blues did it when they won that comeback Game 5, the Manitoba Miracle, and then came home and finished off the Jets. But rarely have we seen one team be good back-to-back.
You're right. And I think the way to look at it is, which team has their star players step up? I mean, Tomas Hertl and Pavelski, or is it Shen and Tarasenko? Or you could say, you could also go another way, just which goaltender plays better. That's the one thing I think the Blues have the edge. Not that Martin Jones is bad, but at times he has been bad, and we haven't seen, our goalie be bad ever.
And I think with Binnington, there are nights when you don't have to be great, but you have to be pretty good. And the other night, when it got to 2-2, you got real nervous, and then you look up at the end of the game. He quietly held them to two goals in their own building. That's a pretty darn good performance.
Yeah, absolutely.
In that building, you only go for two goals, and he quietly stops 24-26. So, Binnington, you don't worry about him. I think in San Jose, and we've talked to some of their people, that's an area where they are a little concerned. I think it was Brett Hedekin who said, even during that Vegas series, there was a time when everybody thought they were going to the backup, that they were going to yank their starting goalie, that was sort of expected earlier in this playoff run. So, again, I think Martin Jones is the key for them if you get in front of him. Binnington may not be the key because he's so consistent that you don't even make him one of your keys. You just kind of count on him to quietly perform well. That's it. Wow, Joe Mazzola is in the house. Hoff also. By the way, Hoffman broke my record from yesterday.
People listening at home that keeps, the analytics of this, is Martin broke a record held by Charlie Marlowe where the quickest time you've walked into a restaurant and went right for the food. Charlie held it at 14 seconds. Martin broke the record at 9 seconds. And now Brian Hoffman in 5 seconds. Didn't even acknowledge that we were here.
You're on the
and
air.
Immediately
you
went for a
rude.
Toasted rav. Just grabbed a rav.
I don't think it. He didn't even notice if it was us or not. It could have been Y98. Yeah. And he would have stopped and had food. He just saw the food, ate it. And I don't think it's a record that can be broken. It's like the Rubik's Cube. At some point, these kids that do it so fast, there's no faster to be done. I don't think that record, I will posit, Hoff, that record will never be broken.
In fairness, I have not eaten today, and also I love toasted ravs. If I see one, I'm going to eat one.
In fairness.
That's what's going to happen.
He's like these guys when we're doing it at Schnucks, these people that come in
and
shopping, and they just grab our food.
Tend to be a little older.
Yes.
What is it about when you're a little older, you're looking for the sample?
Exactly.
The free sample.
Yeah. Well, that's right. We all used to go to Sam's a long time ago, remember?
People will just kind of walk by. And sometimes they ask, are these free?
Yeah.
These samples?
We should start charging.
Okay.
Start charging
we
for the food.
We should start charging for the samples.
Or put a tip jar
like
out.
A dollar.
Please.
Yes. Let's do it.
All right. Back to the series for a moment.
Away from the food. We'll get back to the food in a minute.
I think one of the most interesting thing said, even though the Sharks have these two Norris-winning defensemen, that as great as they are, they're not unbelievable from a defensive point of view as defensemen. You know, they're like, they're vulnerable in that regard. I mean, where they're great players, especially Burns, but this is a team you could score some goals on.
Yeah, and I would like to see the Blues, and granted, you had four goals the other night, but maybe give yourself a little breathing room. Wouldn't it be nice to be sitting on a lead and actually hold a lead? I know Doug Vaughn always joked about the two-goal lead being the worst lead in sport. You would think, no, it's better than having a one-goal lead. I have to say, and I think we had Hoff crunch the numbers one day, it does seem like the team with the two-goal lead almost always coughs it up.
Yeah.
But wouldn't you like to see you'd like to see the Blues come out flying tonight, take that same energy level you had, because I never understand it when they say after the game, well, we were a little flat, we came out slow. There should be no reason. This town is fired up for hockey. When's the last time, even a Cardinal game like last night, not to the diehard baseball people, and we all love the Cardinals, but it almost had an afterthought feel yesterday that they were playing a series in Atlanta. I know that's sacrilege in this town, but that's how much I think the Blues conversation has dominated.
Yeah. Let me ask you, at 10 o'clock, did you lead with the Cardinals?
Yes.
Okay. At least I was tempted to lead with the Blues, who weren't playing, because by far the Blues are the biggest threat. But I figured if the game's going on at 7 o'clock.
And I think yesterday the Blues, it was sort of a quiet day because they traveled back. You didn't really talk to anybody. So nothing had happened since Monday in terms of media availability, so you didn't have any new angles to work. So I think that helped decide it. But if Mike Caruso's listening, of course, I led with Blues on every show yesterday. Just in case Mike is listening but wasn't watching.
Now the great debate on what St. Louis sports celebrity should be like leading the Blues out. Did you see who was the Carolina sports celebrity?
So this is not just a San Jose thing, I guess. Everybody's sort of trying to one-up themselves with these.
Yeah.
Carolina, well, it was not Torrey Holt, I hope, because he'd be cheating on us. Carolina.
Now, think of
the Marlboro man.
Rasheed Wallace. Because when you think Carolina Hurricane, you think of the leader in technical fouls for a stretch in the NBA. But he played at North Carolina, kind of stayed in that area. So he was their guy.
Yeah. Feels a little
stretched.
Random. I don't know how visible he is. Maybe he's real visible in that community. I think, and Mike Caruso has gone silent on the topic, I guess. But I would think if you were going to try and make that play tonight, Ozzie's your number one choice. St. Louis ambassador, Hall of Famer. Orlando Pace would be fun because also people wouldn't be expecting it. I still think at some point I'd roll out Mike Shannon just for
the
surprise
idea.
Factor.
I don't know if he wants to. That'd be interesting.
He might be fishing. You might have to talk him off the lake. Dr. Rick is on the line. And, Doc, I'm having a little side salad right now with a little vinegar and oil. And Frank is having a little sausage pepperoni pizza, to each his own, right?
Delicious. Both sound very, very good.
All right, Rip, from the recent headlines, and I have to say, we use the cooking spray at home, the canister of Pam, you know, to kind of grease up the. Dr. Rick, of course, finds a story that says those canisters of Pam cooking spray are now exploding. What do we need to know?
So this is kind of interesting. So if the can is vented, you know, there's holes on the other side of the little spray thing. You got to keep it away from the fire. So I actually tested this. I took a little match, and I tried to torch with some Pam. Of course, Michelle almost killed me. Tried to torch the Pam, and it will actually make a little fire if you get near those holes in the back of the Pam. So I think the key thing is keep it away from an open flame. And although the Pam people say they're fixing it, it's not fixed yet. So you can use it, and it's not a problem. You just cannot put it near an open flame. You got to kind of get it away a little bit from the open flame because it's combustible.
Now, did your wife think you were hearkening back to your adolescent day? You were doing like a pyro trick?
Well, I said, I just got to see if this is true because, you know, you can't believe everything you read. So I just went outside and I took a little match, and sure enough, you know, old school like we used to do in high school, the thing kind of goes shooting out. And I was like, wow, you know, just got to keep it away from the flame. She, of course, said I was adolescent and I was an idiot, and so not to do that and not use all the Pam up. So that's what happened.
How about a hockey thought? An interesting story this morning at the Enterprise Center where Robert Thomas was not on the ice for the morning skate, but Coach Berube said he is going to play, so they're calling it a maintenance day. What do you think on a 19-year-old? That's kind of surprising that he'd need a break. Give us an idea on what the thinking could be behind this.
My guess is he's a little beat up. He's a little sore. And I think some guys will skate, some guys won't skate. The veterans usually don't skate, or if they skate, it's a couple times around, loosen up and nothing. My guess is he's got, you know, a little lingering injury going on because, like I said, he's 19 and he's a guy who's going to be very aggressive and want to skate. But as we go deeper into the playoffs, and I remember this the year that I owned Tampa Bay when we won the Cup, we had a lot of guys that just were like, oh, my gosh, you know, just not another practice, not another skate. Just and so as you get deeper and deeper into the Cup, guys have lost weight. Guys are, you know, obviously beat up. And the last thing they need to do is go, you know, work on their slap shot or passes, et cetera. They just don't want to be near the ice if they don't have to be.
What about the whole concept of this, like, morning skate, or in basketball, it's the morning shoot-around? And I think Pat Riley may have been the first to do that, that instead of giving the player the entire morning and afternoon off and just have them show up at 4 o'clock, that they do get the legs moving and they do go over some things and get some shots up. Do you agree with that philosophy?
Well, you know, I remember in a lot of Olympic games, sitting around all day waiting for, let's say, an afternoon heat. And I think that was a problem. And I used to tell Bobby Kersey and John Smith, the track coaches, let's just go to the track and let's just, you know, run a 400, jog a 400. And this was with, you know, Marion Jones, Gail Devers, Allison, you know, and I just thought it was bad to sit all day long. And the concept is not dissimilar. So with the Panthers, we would try to get the guys up early. Even with the Blues, we try to get the guys up early. And even if they just went for a 10-minute, you know, spin on an exercise or whatever, but just so you weren't sitting all day long. And so I definitely agree with the concept. I think just this whole thing, sitting until game time, is a mistake. But I also think that once you get deeper into the playoffs, rather than maybe getting on the ice, you know, maybe you just get on an exercise and just have a little spin class for 5 or 10 minutes, or you know, just get on a treadmill and walk for five. So it's not necessarily doesn't have to be hockey related or sports related, but just something. Because otherwise, all you're going to do is sit there all day and you just get so tight. So again, maybe stretch, whatever. But a lot of guys just don't want to see the ice.
I mean, do you believe? And I think it's actually documented that the morning skate though was started just so they would make sure the guys weren't too hungover, that they knew they had to be there in the morning so they couldn't just sleep it off.
Shout out Brett Hull.
Well, that was old school, and that was absolutely a fact. I mean, that was a fact. And I think anyone who's been around it has, you know, I'm not calling anybody out, but has seen guys come to the rink, sometimes not gone to bed, and just walked in, you know, and they're, you know, and with their tie all messed up and stuff all over their face. So I'm sure there was a lot of that back in the day. You know, I remember, you know, and I'm old, seeing guys, you know, they'd take a shift in practice and go over to the boards and smoke. So, you know, things have changed. But there's no question, guys would come in banged up and they'd go in the bathroom and puke, and then they'd come out to the ice. They looked terrible. So you knew if you had to be at the morning skate, you had to go to bed.
You know, my crack producer at Channel 5, Andy Moeller, just texted. It was Bill Sharman of the Lakers who did it, and they did it for that purpose of Will Chamberlain, because he would be out all night trying to get to that sleeping with 20,000 women figure that he claims he did. And it's interesting because Chamberlain later told Sharman, you're either going to get me at 11 o'clock in the morning or you're going to get me at 7 o'clock at night. I'm not coming to both. And he wouldn't show up at half those things.
Well, he was an interesting guy. I mean, I didn't know him well, but I had met him a few times. And he was a guy that really, you know, thought differently than everybody and really, you know, beat his own drum and worked his own way. And he used to tell stories, and God knows if they were true, where he would go through, you know, three or four women in a night, and then same thing, not sleep and come to practice. And, I mean, he was legendary for that. So, again, you know, I think that's very tough on your body, number one, and probably not real good for your performance. But there's no question, you know, that forcing guys to get up, and, again, 10-minute spin, ice, stretch on the ice, whatever, just so they go to bed, get some sleep. And like I said, Orange is coming in or sleeping all day, and you know, they're stiff and they just feel terrible. So breaking that up, I think, is a very good idea. But, you know, whether you have to go skate or not, that's a whole different story.
Okay, what was the setting that Dr. Rick Lehman ended up rubbing shoulders or meeting or being around Wilt?
Well, I'll tell you, I've been with the guy probably four or five times. Mike Kupchak, there was a bunch of guys that I'm pretty good friends with out in L.A. And you know, he would be at events and he would hang around. And he was a very talkative guy once he got to know you. At first, he wouldn't talk to you and he wouldn't say anything. And then if you introduced yourself once or twice and you got to know him a little bit, he would talk and, you know, have a drink and shoot the breeze. And he was just a very cordial guy. And if you were with some of the Laker guys, and, you know, that would be Magic or some of the guys that he knew, he was very open. Otherwise, he was very guarded. He, you know, wouldn't come by. And I'll tell you another thing about him. He's a pretty bright guy. I mean, he remembers a lot of stuff that probably he shouldn't have remembered.
You know, you mentioned about Wilt and what he did off the court. There used to be, there was a line in the Rocky, I think it was Rocky One, about women weakened legs, and these girls came up to Balboa when he was training, and Burgess Meredith, you know, Mickey tossed them out, and he said, you know, women weakened legs. Do you think there's anything to that? I know this sounds like a Charlie Tuna topic here, but go ahead.
Yes, don't save the good stuff for Tuna.
You know, I think this whole idea, you know, this Vince Lombardi, you know, if you find someone worth a $2,000 fine, call me and all this. I think that's just, you know, that's just historical. So, I mean, I don't think you should be up all night. I think you need your 7 or 8 hours of sleep. But I think the other stuff is strictly mythical, and I don't think there's anything to it. I think Wilt's deal was he was just very aggressive, and based on that, you know, wouldn't get his sleep, and I think that is a problem. But I think just, you know, doing something the night before, I don't think it weakens legs. It makes for good Rocky movies, but in reality, I don't think it matters.
Dr. Rick Lehman, the founder, the medical director, U.S. Center for Sports Medicine, an orthopedic surgeon to the stars over the years, NBA-related, Kevin Durant with a calf injury. I think when we hear calf injury, we say, well, that's nothing. He should be back soon. But why is it possible that this is going to keep him out for a while?
So he had a medial gastroc tear. So your calf has two heads, the inside and the outside, the medial and the lateral. And the inside part of the gastroc is called the medial head. And this could literally take 4 to 6 weeks to get better. So whether they'll be able to move, he had a type 2, whether they'll move him along a little bit quicker with a little bit more aggressive treatment, and they haven't to date, I don't know. But I would not expect to see him in the semis or the conference finals. Whether he'll make it at the end, I don't know. But he's apparently, this is not a HIPAA thing, so I can't say, but he's apparently struggling.
Good stuff, Dr. Rick. We will talk next week. Thank you so much for your time.
You guys take care.
All right, a new revelation. Dr. Rick actually knew Wilt.
Knew Wilt Chamberlain, yeah. I think it's Mitch Kupchak, but he's basically saying the Laker folks that he would hang out with, and once you're in that circle, I guess former Lakers sort of walk into, he'd be hard to miss, right? If you're Wilt Chamberlain and you didn't want to be social, you couldn't really go into a room and just sort of blend into the background.
One time the Indiana Pacers were playing the Lakers, and Steve Stepanovich was on the beach during like an off day, and he's walking the beach and he sees this volleyball match going on, and it's Wilt.
Wow.
And Wilt sees Stipo, a fellow 7-footer, and he goes, "Stipo!" And he comes over and shakes Wilt's hand. And Steve, who's a legit 7 feet, said Wilt looked like he was 7'5".
Wow.
So, all right, we'll take a short time out. We're broadcasting live from one of the great places in St. Louis. Maggie O'Brien's, we'll be right back.